It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Daniel Pryor in studio once again to discuss an issue that he says is right up there with marital counseling, as do the issue that he deals with the most, and that is addictions. This seems to be the buzzword in society the last few years.
Yeah.
And you've got your ideas about it.
Yeah, we've talked before on this subject, of course, and it hasn't gone away. There are still people out there who are addicted. And, you know, there are so many things that can become addictions when we look at what we mean by addiction, talking about the brain or the mind. I would say that an addiction is a habitual behavior or habitual thought pattern that has a negative outcome. So there's two things there. I keep doing it, and I'm doing it to my own hurt. And, you know, people who with addictions, if they know they have an addiction, sooner or later they get past the denial part, and they know they have an addiction because they know it's costing them something and they can't stop it. And so, but you can also, reasoning that through, you can say, well, there must be then shades of addictions, or the roots of addictions are, they begin maybe innocently or simply enough, you know, in some of these, eating too much food probably started, it was a gradual increase, and then you get to the place where it's become, self-medication, or the same with television, or the same with a lot of attention being given to the research of how we are addicted to our technological little devices.
Yeah, that's becoming
and
the
changing the brain.
That's the one that seems to be happening. Mm-hmm. Video game addiction is a huge one.
Yeah, and so we'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about the addictions very broadly, and a little bit in the later part of the show about some of the things that in general that we need to do when we're working with addictions. And of course, that's what I help people do a lot. So addictions are basically, they're a form of fear and shame, and anger and fear and shame. Anger, that's a little bit redundant, because I look at anger as a response to fear and shame. Anxiety and depression, too, are responses to fear and shame. Anxiety and depression then are forms of anger. All this fear and shame, of course, goes back to a theme that is one of the tools that I've developed and used. And of course, again, if you've listened to the show very many times, you've heard me talk about value, control, and power, or resources. This is just kind of our brain feeds on oxygen, our mind feeds on value, control, and power. That's kind of very essential to having human beingness, is to be of value, to control the things that impact my life, and to have resources or power. And so the absence of those three things brings about fear, shame, anxiety, depression. Our escape from those things, fear, shame, anxiety, depression, oftentimes become detrimental, non-productive, hurtful, but repetitive behaviors and thought patterns. We've talked on the show a little bit, too, about personality. And sometimes people will say, well, I have an addictive personality, or someone else has an addictive personality. Well, to clarify on that a bit, we all have addictive personalities, because every one of us has something that kind of a go-to behavior or a go-to thought process that is our escape from anxiety and depression and shame. I suppose in a positive way, you could say you could become addicted to prayer and addicted to God. Addicted to God, addicted to worship and those things, and that would be a very positive thing. Of course, when we usually think of addiction, we think of something that is negative in our life, and we do it to our own hurt, but we can't stop. But so maybe we're talking about replacing addiction with just some a disciplined lifestyle. Maybe that would be the way we differentiate discipline versus addiction. But so we all have an addictive personality. I think when people talk about an addictive personality, they think they're talking about a person who is always addicted to one thing or another. But if we look close enough, we'll find that we're kind of all
I think
that
of it
way.
As somebody who can't seem to do anything in moderation. Mm-hmm. If they get involved in something, they got to go all the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Is that part of it?
I think, yeah, that's part of it. And I suppose that that would also describe a person who has, you know, has a lot of anxiety, depression, anxiety at a low level. Obsessive compulsive kind of behavior, which borderlines on addiction.
Yeah, what's the difference between those two, addiction and obsessive?
I think it's just the terminology. I mean, it's brain wise, it's the same thing. You know, we kind of differentiate because we think of it an addict as having like a substance that they're addicted to, whereas a lot of addiction is just happening in the brain. We're addicted to a particular behavior. For example, an addiction to pornography is a lot like an obsessive compulsive behavior too. You know, there's a stress and you respond to the stress.
Seems like that's what the growth the growth area is in this, mm-hmm. is the behavioral addictions. Because mm-hmm. it used to just be alcohol or drugs, mm-hmm. maybe food, but everything else has become an addiction, like you say, technology addiction, mm-hmm. shopping addiction, mm-hmm. gambling addiction, yeah. behaviors.
Yeah.
Just about any behavior mm-hmm. now can fall into becoming an addiction.
Yeah, because your brain still does the same. The addiction is not just simply in your mind. It's not just, you know, I think of a person who has, for example, a sex addiction, a porn addiction, a gambling addiction or something. It's not just that it's a thought process that continues to come back, like the escape is to go to the casino and gamble away money or something like that. It's actually a neurological thing that's happening too, and so the brain is responding to a mental narrative, and the mental narrative is responding to the brain. So it becomes a circular thing. Like a cycle of addiction is in fact a cycle. You know, the narrative drives the behavior, or the neurology, and the neurology drives the mm-hmm. Narrative and the behavior. And we've talked about personalities, how that. And one of the things I do with people that I won't be able to do on the show because it's a visual thing, but we talk about the personality and the core of the personality and how the core of the personality is a defense mechanism. Core of everyone's personality is a defense mechanism. It's about survival. People build different kinds of personalities based on how they grew up and how people have responded to them in life. So you can develop some personalities that are more positive and some that are less positive. People talk about personality disorders, and I don't talk about personality disorders. I talk about disordered personalities, and that mm-hmm. means all of us. And so that has a lot to do with addiction because it's a defense mechanism, and addiction is part of that defense mechanism. When we're talking about the work that we do in addictions, we're also talking about kind of healing the personality. And then another aspect that we've kind of touched on a bit here that I'll go into in a little bit of depth is the addiction happens in the brain and in the mind. And let me just explain this a little bit. And I keep working at trying to come up with a better layman's terminology because that's what I understand best. And the words are easier to pronounce.
Yeah, you got
pronounce.
Some of these interesting words again, the hippocampus and the amygdala.
Yeah, the amygdala. So we talked a little bit about that. But so let me, I'm going to give people a mental image here that they'll be able to remember. Think of, and very simple, preface this by saying that the brain is extremely complex and we haven't even scratched the surface. The best we can do is look at the brain and see how it functions and try to understand what it's doing. It's much more complex than a computer. So this is just in layman's terms, very simply put. This is, the hippocampus. Think of the hippocampus as a factory that builds two kinds of vehicles. It builds information transport vehicles, and it builds emergency response vehicles. But it can't build these vehicles at the same time. It's either one or the other. The information transport vehicles bring information to the hippocampus from the various regions of the brain, the frontal prefrontal cortex, the sensory areas of the brain. In terms of, they speak of memories or thought processes. So it brings these things together, And then the hippocampus, very simply put, issues orders for a neurological response to these very things. So, you know, you might hear, you know, you've said something, people are clapping and whistling. That gives you a good good feeling about it, because the hippocampus, the these information transport vehicles have brought some memories and things to the hippocampus. And so, you know, you get some dopamine from that. So that's very simply put. When stress comes, the hippocampus shuts down the factory that's building these information transport vehicles, and it begins to build emergency response vehicles. Now, it can't be building information, which means you can't be thinking logically if you allow yourself to be overwhelmed with stress. And so what these emergency response vehicles go directly to the amygdala, and the amygdala is the fight or flight center. And again, I say the brain is very complex, so some of these things you don't find in one area, but the amygdala is the chief area of this. So now it's build. Now the hippocampus is building these emergency response vehicles. If you continue under stress, then the response is going to the hippocampus actually shrinks in its size. It actually gets smaller, and the amygdala begins to grow larger. Now what you're setting up is almost like a vacuum system. It's almost like direct drive from the hippocampus to the amygdala, and you actually begin to see stress in life. Things that didn't used to be stressful are now stressful, and your response to everything is this emergency vehicle. And the only way out of that is to find a way to begin to consciously slow things down and draw on creative thinking and things like that. Well, addictions are very much like that, where the addiction is a quick response to a stimuli. Boredom, worry, anxiety, depression, fear, and you run to the addiction. And so it's very much like the hippocampus just building these emergency response vehicles. And so that's why it becomes addictive. Ordinarily, if you were to hear some sort of a frightening sound and you get a bit of an adrenaline rush, that's the hippocampus has built an emergency response vehicle and sent it to the amygdala. But then that sound is gone, and very quickly the brain prunes that neurological path away, so it's not there anymore. But if you continue to be stressed, it will actually reinforce that pathway, and now you've got a freeway going from the hippocampus to the amygdala. And
so some real physical changes in your brain happen by addictive behavior.
Yeah. So the idea is to change the narrative. If we change the narrative, we can change the function of the hippocampus. So when we come back, the second part, I want to go a little bit more into that, bring out a couple of scriptures, and then we'll talk about, in general terms, how we turn this around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel Pryor's approach to addiction recovery issues. It's a hot topic. It seems to be everywhere. Somebody has got some kind of an addiction, and Daniel has a real different approach to some of these issues and has seen a lot of success in his counseling. If people are listening today, Daniel, and they would like to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yes, you can call me at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, and all of these radio shows are at that website as podcasts.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with Life Coach and Counselor Daniel Pryor here in a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Christian marriages are being attacked as never before, from outside and from within. Today more than ever before, you have to be proactive, learning to better be aware, to be more caring, and to be better communicators, recognizing and dealing with problems that are from within, from without, personal, or relational. And that's where I can help you. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland this week on the Sound Mind broadcast, looking at the subject of addiction recovery and some of Daniel's observations and some techniques that have proven successful in his practice and in helping people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to talk about turning it around here. And we are just speaking in general terms, but this is kind of the direction we go. The Bible speaks about taking thoughts captive, taking every thought captive, 2 Corinthians 10:5. Now, that passage talks about our spiritual warfare. And so if people recognize that passage, they say, the weapons of our warfare. Well, it doesn't list them there, but you can kind of deduce from other passages what those weapons would be. Of course, they kind of amount to faith. Certainly the Word of God would be a weapon, and you know, we know Christ himself was an example of that, you know, countering the temptations of Satan with the Word of God. Of course, prayer would be one. Now, prayer is a whole study in itself. Prayer is kind of a lost art in the church. So many people don't understand prayer, when a lot of times people will come in, and again, it's Bible-based counseling, so the majority of my clients are Christians, and we'll be talking, and I could say, have you prayed about it? Now, this is something they would expect their pastor to say. They might not expect a mental health counselor to say, have you prayed about it? But in fact, prayer, talking to God about our circumstances, if in fact we do believe that there's a God, that would be the that would be a very important thing. So prayer isn't cheating, you know, when you go to counseling. But sometimes you get a response that's a little bit concerning, where people will say, well, yeah, I pray. It's sort of like, well, you know, duh, everybody does that, but what's that got to do with my problem? And so prayer is kind of a misunderstood and kind of a lost art. So anyway, let me move on. Remain on prayer, but it's just one of the important things, the weapons of our warfare. Communion with the saints, fellowship. So, and et cetera. There are other weapons of our warfare. So that's the context of this scripture, to take every thought taking every thought captive. It means that the mind takes control via a particular, like a biblical narrative. The mind takes control of the neurology. We were talking earlier about how there's a neurology in the brain, and the neurology can drive a behavior or a narrative, and then the behavior narrative in turn goes back and drives the neurology. Taking every thought captive, it's not just that we say the verse, they keep taking every thought captive. There's actually a process to taking thoughts captive, to changing a thought process, and it also has to do with changing the neurology of the thought. So we have to have a biblical narrative, and of course I mentioned the weapons of our warfare, which constructing the biblical narrative will involve a lot of those things. But what is the so I use a narrative to correct my to bring my thought into to bring my thought captive. I want it to line up with my belief. But then what is the narrative in the mind? What is my belief? Because we know that my behaviors, my addictive behaviors, are following some emotions, which are following some behaviors. So there's order is behavior, emotion, or belief, emotion, behavior. So what's my belief? So then the narrative that I want has to follow, follow from like an integrated biblical worldview. That's fundamental. What I mean by integrated biblical worldview is, it's not enough to quote scriptures that I don't understand, or talk about prayer without understanding how to use it. It's the integrated worldview, and integrating a worldview means to actually coming around and understanding and believing those things. So this is a process. You don't get away from an addiction, but with a Band-Aid. This is like a life change, a way of changing my thinking. I want to jump ahead a little bit here. And a lot of times when people are stuck in addictions, the problem is they don't really believe they can change. And whether it's addictive behavior, really hardcore addictive behavior, or if it's just a thought pattern or that you can't break, a habit that you can't break, it's important that you envision yourself delivered. The Bible says, Proverbs 29:18. Without a vision, the people perish, or they wander aimlessly, a different translation says. Mm. So we need vision. We need to envision. A person has to be able to see, what would I look like delivered. Because and I talked to a lot of people with addictions and asked them, when you're free from this, what will you look like? I mean, try to picture yourself a day in the life of, and you don't have an addiction. What do you see yourself doing? And a lot of times they don't have an answer to that. They really haven't envisioned themselves delivered. They don't know where they're going. And it's hard to go somewhere and get motivated and stay motivated if you don't envision. So you need to ask God for a glimpse of where he wants you to be.
This seems key to breaking addiction, getting a vision, having hope is another way of saying it.
Yeah, if you don't have a vision, there's nothing to hope on. There's nothing to pull you forward. So that's critical. The healing of personality, we've talked in the last show, we hit a little bit on this. No, we didn't. We hit on it earlier. We hit on this earlier in the show that personality is a defense mechanism, and so we're actually healing personalities when we are when we're being delivered from addiction, and we're working on relationships. One of the things I talk a lot about in one of my models is that your world is either getting larger or smaller. When our world is getting smaller, we're retreating from two things, basically, work and relationships. So I say addictions are the opposite of relationships. People who are in addictions are cutting off their relationships.
In their own world. Yeah.
Now, they may be growing in superficial relationships, the drinking buddies or the, you know, but the meaningful relationships, the important relationships are being cut off in their own world. World's getting smaller. So they have to move forward by growing relationships and working toward meaningful work. We're replacing a responsive behavior, an addicted responsive behavior. You know what I mean by that is that the behavior is a response to fear and shame and anxiety and depression. So we're replacing that addictive behavior, that responsive behavior, with the purposeful work. And that can be a leap for people. Again, you have to envision how you would be, what your life would be when you're delivered in order to move forward with that. So part of that, part of how you would look is you would be replacing this addictive, automatic, responsive behavior with the purposeful work. In other words, you would take your dreams that aren't doing you any good at all, and you would turn them into goals and start working toward goals so that you'd have something. So there has to be a replacement there. That's, we spend some time on that when we're talking about addictive recovery. And then the other thing is that we're replacing self-centered fear with other-centered joy. So we're growing our world in two ways. We're moving away from addictions. We're moving toward faith, toward hope, toward courage in two ways. We're moving toward relationships, and we're moving toward toward productive work. So
is this the reason you think a lot of addiction is worked on in groups, and group therapy seems to be helpful for addiction? Is that what you mean by this, or when you say relationships and working with others?
Well, I hadn't thought of that, but that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that the group support groups and group therapy, they do take you in the direction of relationships. We need to go further than that. The group sometimes can become the abnormal population in which I'm normal,
right?
And so I won't move beyond that. But it's a start. It gets you out of your home and
out of your head.
Yeah, it gets you out of your head and into. And it can also be a step toward other centeredness. You know, built. You know, when we talked a little bit earlier about changing the personality, the way you change your personality, which it has to be done in the context of relationship. And, of course, the deeper relationships are, I'm able to change my personality more significant. But the way that we change our personality, spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, too, is through empathy, shared boundaries, and shared reality. Well, you can't do that if you're not in relationship with people. And a lot of times these support groups and addictive recovery groups will force me out of my own head and out of my own
self-denial.
Yeah, and
seems to me that's the best thing about the recovery group is it's the beginning of breaking the denial
that
you have a problem.
Then you have to move beyond the group. And a lot of times this is just deeper understanding and having the courage to move out a little. The group, even though it has it begins out positive, it can become a nest that you don't want to stay in. And so you need to move those relationships further beyond there, and that can take a challenge. So that in kind of a very general terms, and I hope it was clear, but that in very general terms is my approach to addictive recovery. Been pretty successful. People tweak it and kind of tailor it for themselves, but I think the fundamentals of it are there. We've covered it pretty quickly, but it's very helpful to a lot of people.
Well, it's an issue that it's a growth industry. A lot of people struggling with all kinds of different addictions. You've had a lot of success in helping people, and people are listening today. They need to take the first step, which is to talk to somebody your addiction, because so many addictions are a secretive thing. You don't want to tell anybody you're struggling. Daniel would love to hear from you. He'd love to help you. And if people need some help, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, you can call me at 425-778-6169, 778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. This show is going to be podcasted there. And as you were mentioning from time to time, too, about 3 years of shows are podcasted there. So there's a lot of stuff on personality and addiction and marriage and all kinds of things. If you go over to the archives and look, or I think at the bottom of the page it says older broadcasts or something. You can go back pages and...
And you have offices where again?
I have offices in Kirkland and office in Edmonds.
And Edmonds, okay.
And also do Skype.
Yeah. There we go. Hey, always great stuff on the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.